Hey guys, welcome to another episode of the Entertainment Now podcast. My name is Nick.
I'm Ian.
You are Ian with a mouthful of Celsius.
No, I swallowed it before I said anything.
Yeah, she swallowed it. Oh, man.
That's a great way to start the show off.
Yes. Hit the ground running. I will say that, you know, if you're watching this on YouTube, I have most of our episodes up on YouTube. I think I'm still a couple of weeks behind, but give us the thumbs up and all that YouTube-y kind of stuff. I will say that we are recording in person, so the video, there's no video that'll be up on YouTube, it's just the audio, like we do every...
Which, if you have good vision, is probably a blessing.
Oh, whatever. Maybe if they're looking at you, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, I can only speak for myself, but...
I'm like a Greek fucking god.
Balding, middle-aged, Greek god.
Oh, fuck off.
Not even balding, completely bald.
Bald and beautiful. No, you're balding, Ian. Yes, I'm just bald.
Yeah. I'm processing my hair deficiencies.
Yeah. I actually, it's funny, people at work, I shouldn't say just people at work. I always hear people say, like, talk about, you know, doing their hair and stuff like that. And they're like, oh, it must be nice to be bald. And I'm like, it's actually a lot of fucking work to be bald. I gotta shave my head every other fucking day.
Oh, see, I don't. I'll let it grow out to a point that I just Ian's
got like the skullet going on.
No,
like,
it's there, but it's just yeah.
It's It's kind of long. It's kind of a.
Let's just say that I'm gonna start buzzing it more often.
It's no longer like a forehead. It's like a seven head.
Come on, it's at least eight.
So the thing always gets me, like, we work with this guy, and I'm sure he doesn't listen to the podcast, so it doesn't really matter. But
we won't say any
super,
names.
Super fucking nice guy, and he's younger. I want to say he's probably very early 30s, maybe late 20s, but I think he's like early 30s. Mm-hmm. But he's got like the fucking ring going on. I'm gonna be like, dude, just let go, like just let it go, let it go.
You have to tell me who it is after we get off the
shave your fucking head, man. Yeah. Like it's time, just. Get rid of it.
Yeah.
Because don't...
Especially if you're young, because it's like, at that point, you know...
I worked with a guy back in, like... I'm sorry, finish your...
I was going to say, you can still kind of, like... You know, where the bald head is still kind of fashionable, because you're younger, rather than it just being, you know, a necessary choice.
I think if you've got a good shape to your head, bald is always a good choice. Like, regardless of what age is.
I don't think I do. That's my problem. I don't like the shape of my head.
No?
No. I mean, most people say it's all right, but I don't like it.
I used to work with this guy probably about 10 years or so ago. It might be longer ago than that, but it's a while ago. It's not no one we work with now, but
right.
Super nice guy. He was young. He was definitely under 30, but he had the whole Friar Tuck thing going on.
Oh, yeah, that's rough.
So it's like the full ring with just the bald in the middle.
It's like the young Patrick Stewart kind of thing going
on? Yes. Oh, it's like, dude, just get rid of it.
Yeah.
Just get rid of it.
Like I said, because you're, regardless of whatever the shape of your head is, everyone's seeing it bald technically anyway. Yeah. And at least, like I said, you're young enough where it can be still kind of a fashion statement rather than just a fashion necessity.
Yeah. And I saw him, I saw a picture of him not too long ago on social media and like.
He's still rocking
He's still holding on for dear life, man. He's trying to style it a little differently now, so it doesn't look as bald. But I'm like, dude, you're young.
Well,
just fucking
at that point, it's
it.
Either you know shave it, or you know start rocking the toupee. You know?
Oh man, don't ever toupee should be
the people. There are people out there who, if you can afford it, you can get a nice one, and you can put it.
If you're gonna do that and afford it, just get implants.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how the implant thing works. Because
implants have come a long way.
Some people it looks great on. Elton John, for example.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he's, you know, super rich, so he can afford it. Because let's face it, his hair, he's got a thicker head of hair now than he's ever had in his entire life. In fact, at one point, his hair looked like mine.
Yes.
And now he looks like, you know, it looks like a wig, but it's not. I know it's implants. But anyway, I just don't know how that works. And is it? Because it seems to me like whatever would cause the hair loss genetically or whatever would still apply to the implants, right?
No. No. No, the implants aren't affected by the genes and all that stuff that, you know, that cause baldness in the first place. But you know, there's a lot of those like shampoos and stuff out right. there that work really well. The only problem is
you have to use them the rest of your life.
Yeah, when you stop taking all of the falls out. But right. yeah, I mean, there's options out there.
I'll tell you what, if I win the lottery, I'll do the transplant thing and see how it works.
Just fucking shave it, man.
Well, I buzz it. I can't. I'm not bicking it. I'm not doing.
Why not?
Because I don't want to have to deal with that. I don't even shave. I don't even shave my beard.
Going back
often.
To what I originally said, it's a lot of fucking work. Yeah, it's a lot of work taking care of a bald head.
I literally, my head and my face are exactly the same. When they start looking scraggy, I just buzz them, and I'm done.
Yeah.
It's like a 10-minute job. I'm good, and I'm good for a month or two.
See, with my facial hair, I know people really don't give a shit about anything we're talking about.
Welcome to the Grooming Now podcast.
Male grooming. But, well, that sounds even worse. I should say that.
Brought to you by Manscaped.
Yeah, exactly. I wish we were sponsored, but whatever. Yeah. But so with my beard, I try to keep it trimmed short because I realize once I start letting it grow out longer, it gets whiter. Yeah. So.
No, you're too young for gray hair, Nick.
I'm not saying that.
I know.
But yeah, I already have enough gray in my beard. When it gets longer, it gets whiter.
It starts to be more distinct, yeah.
So yeah.
Same with me. So,
yeah, every other day I shave my head. Because I shave my head in the shower, too, so I'm already in there. Right. It's like 2 fucking minutes and done.
How do you know you don't miss anything?
Because I've been fucking shaving my head for 12 years, 14 years, something like that, a long time.
Okay.
I've been shaving my head, so I'm just...
Well, I'm shaving my face. I still wouldn't do that in the shower.
Plus, I do have a mirror. I've got one of those. I do have a mirror in my shower.
Shower mirror, yeah.
But I can feel my head, with my hand. I can tell if I missed anything. So, yeah, I do that every other day, and then once a week I trim my beard and all that stuff just to keep my rugged handsomeness going on. Bald and beautiful.
I don't know. Can you hear the crickets chirping?
Fuck off. So, what else has been going on lately, man? Like I said before, I said this just recently to you. This is Ian's opportunity to bring up anything he would like to discuss before we go into the topic.
Oh.
So, well. So, Ian, let me say that again. Hey, Ian, anything else going on? What else is going on, man?
Nothing. There's nothing going on.
Nothing at all.
I guess. I always take that question as what's going on in your life. Well, nothing's going on in my life.
That's not at all what I've... So we've been doing a podcast since...
2017.
So 7 fucking years. And the entire... So we've done, several hundred of these podcast episodes, and I've never meant what's going on in your life. I meant like, hey, Ian, what's going on? Because I'm going to talk about something after you say nothing that has nothing to do with my personal life. It's just something I want to talk about.
Well, I mean, there's tons of stuff I want to talk about. I just don't know if there's necessarily apropos to anything going on right now.
Oh,
if it were, I would bring it up.
Okay. Because there is one thing I would like to talk about.
Yeah.
And that is the recent Rock and Roll Hall of Fame announcement.
Yeah.
Do you know who got inducted? I guess I should ask. I've got the list up here. I'll just run through the list if that's okay.
I don't think they've been inducted yet because the voting's still going on.
I'm sorry. Not the inductions. This is
the nominations.
Correct. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame nominations for 2024.
So, yeah.
I can kind of guess who is going to be nominated, though. But.
Well, I know Ozzy was for solo work, and obviously I'm a huge Ozzy fan. So, you know, I really hope he gets it. He's already in there for Sabbath, so.
The funny thing is, I know a couple years ago on the YouTube channel, on the Vinyl Den, if you don't watch the Vinyl Den, go fucking watch the Vinyl Den on YouTube. But anyway.
Fucking watch it.
We did a whole episode about people that need to be inducted into Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The big one we both talked about in the episode was Ozzy. So it's great to see Ozzy finally get nominated. Right. But there's some other good ones in there, too. You got, I don't think Mary J. Blige is going to get in.
Not this year.
Yeah.
I think that's what I was thinking. And before we go further, the list, I don't have a problem with any of them being in the Hall of Fame. I just feel like there's other bands that have been eligible a lot longer who probably deserve to be in there. And these artists are like just becoming eligible. So like, maybe some, move them down a few rows.
I would say everyone on here, I would say a chunk of these people have been nominated before.
Oh, have they? Okay.
Only a couple of them are like freshly eligible. Because
Mary J. Blige is pretty much right at the cusp, right?
It's 25 years, so you're eligible 25 years after your first album.
Right.
I think she was nominated last year, I believe.
Okay. So she's at the 25, 26
yeah, so
mark.
Yeah, Mary J. Blige, I don't think she's going to get in. I think she deserves to be in there.
Oh, yeah. I didn't have a problem with any of the nominees. Like I said, I just feel like there's a lot of other artists that have been overlooked for a lot longer.
I will say, going to that point, though, you're right. There are a lot of people that should be inducted. But, like, and the Hall of Fame has said this before, too, is, like, you can't induct, like, everyone all at once.
Right.
You have to kind of pick and choose. You try to pull people from different generations, different decades, have kind of a variety in there outside. Cause they did that with the first, like, I don't know, 6 or 8 induction classes. It was like all those, like,
cause it was the first.
Yes. Elvis and all those people that got it, that, right. You know,
well, at that point,
everyone
probably
outside of Ian thinks it should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but
I, there's very few that I would say don't belong, but even Elvis, I can't stand Elvis, but there's no doubt that he deserves to be in there.
Yeah.
So
like
it's not about my personal preference of the artist, because I couldn't tell you a Mary J. Blige song, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I know she's been around. I know how relevant she's been in the music industry, and she's had hits and. I've heard her sing. I heard her song, so I know she's talented.
Yeah.
So there's no question that she belongs there. Just not an artist I would have chosen necessarily, but that's not what it's about. It's about, like you said, kind of getting a broad grasp of that pop or rock, whatever, you know.
So kind of run down through the list. Mary J. Blige is on there. I don't think she's going to get in. Mariah Carey's on there. I don't think she's going to get in either this year.
Right.
Cher will get in.
Right, and I'm kind of surprised she's not in there.
I'm kind
of,
well,
is she in there under Sonny and Cher?
She is not in there under Sonny and Cher. She is not in there at all.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised she's not in there.
So Cher, I think Cher is a lock this year. Dave Matthews Band was nominated last year. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'll get in this year. I think Eric B. and Rakim will get in this year. Foreigner, I'm not even sure Foreigner should be there, but like.
But why not?
I don't know. Because I kind of go back to what you're saying before is like when there's artists like that I think even in their genre are on the cusp, I think there's other bands in that era of music in that genre that probably deserve it more than Foreigner. And that's kind of where I can see some of the argument there. But if Foreigner gets in, I'm fine with it with them getting in. But.
Yeah, I don't necessarily have a problem with it because I mean, they've been eligible for a long time you can't deny that they have a presence in classic rock, at least.
Yeah.
So there's no, I don't have any issue with that. And you're probably right. There might be other bands that deserve to be in there more, but it's not like the Baseball Hall of Fame where it's like music is, you know, where it's stats. Baseball is stats.
Baseball is still very subjective also because generations. See, baseball is one of those sports where you can't compare generations because baseball changes so much. I get what you're saying.
Yeah,
music, there's a little bit more objectivity to the selection process than there is with Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I mean subjectivity. Oh, yeah, objectivity with baseball, with sports. With sports Hall of Fames in general, I think, because you have stats to work off of, and you can't really...
I mean, there are stats with music
Can't really go by, like, sales, because even by that standard, this album may have sold more than this one, but it's you can't deny where different tastes and different genres and everything else go. Yeah. So it is more subjective in music. I don't know how people get into the Hall of Fame in baseball or other sports, but I know this is obviously a nomination process, but then it's voted on by the public too. So you got public taste and everything going.
Well, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame isn't based off of public vote.
Yeah, it is.
No, it's not.
Seeing things
so there's
about voting.
There's a fan vote.
Okay.
The fan vote, whoever wins the fan vote counts as one vote.
Oh, okay.
And then the board, it's bullshit.
Right. Okay.
Because I think there's a couple of years ago, I don't remember who it was. somebody won the fan vote and was inducted.
Yeah.
And then I don't even think that they were nominated the next year. Mm. So the next one, so yeah, I mean, so yeah, like I said, a foreigner gets in, I'm fine with that. The next one's somebody I know you'll love to see get in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. One of your favorite artists of all time. You absolutely love
it. Is it Taylor Swift?
No, it's Peter Frampton.
Oh, again, you're right. I don't like Peter Frampton. No, I
don't think anyone really loves Peter Frampton. Peter Frampton.
Frampton Comes Alive was a huge selling record. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying, though. It's like his one big shining album was a live album.
Right.
Because no one really liked his studio stuff.
Yeah. So if him being in there, it makes no difference to me. I don't care. Cause again, you can't argue with him being recognized in that same category of classic rock. So, you know, I'm cool. I don't give a shit. I really don't. Honestly, I don't think there's any artists that I would say don't belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame at some point or another.
Yeah.
You know, even Hanson should end up in there eventually.
Well, I don't know about Hanson. I mean, Umbop was a big song, but.
Yeah. I said it, you know, tongue in cheek,
yeah,
but
I know,
you know.
Right. Yeah, I get it. Jane's Addiction's on there. I think Jane's Addiction definitely deserves to be in there.
Yeah.
Especially Perry Farrell, if you consider all the Lollapalooza stuff and everything that. You know, how influential not only he was, but the band was.
Mm-hmm.
They deserve to be in there. Cool in the Gang.
Hey, if the Bee Gees are in there, Cool in the Gang should be
in
there.
That's true. That's true. I get that. Lenny Kravitz is nominated this year. I think he definitely deserves to be in there. Yeah. Oasis is nominated. Oasis is going to get in. It is probably going to be, first off, I don't know if Liam Gallagher will even go to the ceremony.
Right.
He's already had some very obscenity laced words to say about even being nominated.
Really?
Yes.
I don't know why I'm surprised.
I think he said something about fuck the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame or who fucking needs the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, something like that.
But he doesn't have to show up.
If they show up, and he does a speech, it is going to be absolutely fucking priceless.
Yeah. Nothing to me will ever beat The Cure. When it just the interviewer, who couldn't have been more than 25 years old, runs up to Robert Smith. He's like, oh my God, are you guys so excited to be here? He's like, not as excited as you. To me, that was just brilliant.
That sounds like Robert Smith.
Yeah. And I mean, when I said it, I even said it with way more emotion than he did, because he was just not as excited. I mean, just, you know, in his typical, you know.
Sinead O'Connor is another interesting one, because she's nominated this year.
Right. And I know she's been eligible, but do you think she'd be on the list this year if she hadn't died?
That's kind of what I was thinking. I think she deserves to be in
right.
there.
I just think it would have been down the road. Until she died, she was no one thought about her.
I wouldn't say no one thought about her.
They're her fans, obviously, but I'm just in general, I think.
There was, when her Greatest Hits album got reissued a year or two back, there was quite a bit of hype about it.
Was there?
When it came out, yeah. Hmm. You know. Her biggest hit was a cover, but she had her album that came out, I think it was the album that came out before whatever album had
Nothing Compares
to You on there. Yeah, I think it was a better album overall. I think her first couple of albums were really good. She got known for that one song, but I think she does deserve to be in there.
Yeah. I just don't think it would have been this year.
Yeah.
Is my thing.
She's definitely a lock this year. I think Ozzy's a lock this year.
He's the only metal artist, I guess, who was nominated.
Well, yeah, because so you got Sinead O'Connor on there, you got Ozzy on there, Sade, and the Tribe Called Quest. I think Tribe Called Quest absolutely needs to be in there. Mm. You know,
it's not my kind of music, but I can't deny that either. You know,
I think they should have been in a fucking decade ago. But
yeah, probably.
I think they were eligible a decade ago, but whatever. They definitely deserve to be in there. I don't know. If I've got to pick five, I'm gonna say Ozzy, Sinead O'Connor, Oasis,
Kravitz,
Cher, and Jane's Addiction.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I can make an argument for just about anyone off of there.
Is it Sade's in there on the list?
Yeah.
Oh, smooth.
I will say
smooth
that.
Smooth operator.
There's just as long as, what was it, 2 years ago, where there was he was a music industry attorney, got nominated. Right. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, I think I even did a whole video on the YouTube channel about, like,
well, in sports, you know, like managers and stuff.
That's different than a fucking attorney.
Well, don't get me wrong.
And I'm somebody that used to work in the legal field.
Yes, but attorneys are like the lowest of low on human scale.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, they pretty much are. You have to sell your, if souls exist, you have to sell it in order to be a fucking lawyer. Even if you're doing everything you can to help people, you're still your job is to fucking lie.
No, you're not. Your job is to tell the truth and
your
and
job
bring
is
the
to,
truth to light.
Your job is to lie.
He wasn't like a criminal attorney.
That's even worse. A business attorney is even worse.
Yeah. All he did was do fucking contracts. Like,
yeah, he's a fucking, he's like.
And why is he in the fucking Rock and Roll?
Right. That's thing? I'm like, saying it's like.
It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
So that's what I always look at. I want to see some of these people get nominated or get inducted this year, but I always want to see like the other people that get in, you know, because you remember when Judas Priest went in a year or two ago, it wasn't as a normal inductee.
Mm.
They got nominated. They got put in under a different category. So
I didn't even know there's different categories.
Yeah. There's like early influence categories. That's how, Harry Belafonte got in last year. So, you know, those are the categories I'm a little more interested in other than the big main category, but I don't know. We'll see once the list should be out in the next couple of months and we'll see. I think it's in the summertime when it gets announced, but I don't know.
I think it'd be nice if Ozzy got in there before he died.
Yeah. Yeah. I think Ozzy's an absolute lock to get in.
You think
this
year. So?
Yeah. If he got nominated.
Yeah. I mean,
he's been eligible for 15 fucking years.
Right. I mean, as a solo artist, yeah, he's been solo for almost 45 years. Yeah. So he's in for Sabbath, which he was only in for 10 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's like.
So I was talking about this. I don't remember if this was a conversation in the Facebook group or on somewhere online, or I don't remember it might have been on a video that someone else did that I was watching, but someone made the argument that, like, so Ozzy's getting inducted this year.
Mm-hmm.
But he shouldn't be inducted because he's already in with Black Sabbath. But it's ridiculous that Dio wasn't inducted with Black Sabbath. And I'm like, well, because
he made three albums with Sabbath.
Yeah.
That's it. Three albums. Yeah. Which, don't get me wrong, two are fantastic albums and one's really good.
Yeah.
So
which one's a really good one?
Mob Rules.
Okay. I would agree with you on that one.
So I it makes no sense for him to be nominated with Sabbath. Dio should be in as a solo artist, but then again, I don't know. Is Dio in there under? Well, Rainbow's probably not in there.
No, they're not.
Because I mean, Dio's been in a lot of bands, so Dio could get nominated under Rainbow, even though he wasn't the only lead singer of Rainbow. He was the lead singer of the first incarnation of Rainbow.
Yeah.
He could get under his solo stuff.
He's not in under his solo stuff either.
No, I know. But I mean, he's one that I think would deserve to be in there under solo. He doesn't need to be in there under Sabbath. For sure.
Yeah, I mean, but like, if you want to include Dio in the Sabbath, like, where do you draw the line?
Right.
Like, there's been, you know,
because then you've got Black Sabbath in there. It's Black Sabbath with Ozzy, Black Sabbath with Dio, Black Sabbath with.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
You know,
what I'm saying though is like, his argument was, well, Dio should have went with Black Sabbath. So Vinnie Appice should have went in with Black Sabbath also. Then.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
Where do you draw the line?
Well, and who was the guy who played bass on like four different fucking, or three different Sabbath albums when Geezer left and went with Ozzy solo band?
Yeah.
You know?
But like, why Dio? Why not include Glenn Hughes in there?
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Like, where do you, so if you bring in Dio, there are other major contributors to Black Sabbath over the life of that band's career.
Right.
So.
Yeah,
I understand why it was only Ozzy, the original incarnation of Black Sabbath that was inducted.
I mean, it would be the same thing if Kansas got in there. If Kansas gets in there, it's going to have to be Kansas with Steve Walsh as the lead singer.
Yeah.
Now, granted, he was the lead singer for the vast majority of their career up to a certain point, but he was with them till 1980. He left, and you had John Elefante in there.
Yeah.
And then I think he even had another one. Then Steve Walsh comes back. And he's with him until 2012. Now it's Ronnie Platt.
Yeah.
Do you induct all of them, or do you just induct the main band from the 70s that everyone remembers? Who knows? I don't know. Could you induct Kansas and have them all show up? You know, it's like, this is a family unit, you know, kind of, it could do something like that. Ozzy and Dio were not under that category, though. No. It's not the same thing.
No, and like, so when you, you've never been to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, have you? So there's like an engraving of all of the signatures from whoever is inducted on a plaque. So like, you can't have like 40 fucking people on there.
Like, right. Well, and yeah, I mean, you wouldn't with Kansas. It'd be a lot,
though. Well, Black Sabbath, you could have, of course, Ozzy, Dio's on there. You could have Ian Gillan on there.
Tony Martin.
Tony Martin, Glenn Hughes. But then there's other people that like were
kind of session players too. Well, really.
Other people they brought in for like tours. Mm-hmm. Dave Walker you could have on there. Ron Keel did a tour with them. Like, there's other people. So you, then you end up with like all these fucking people,
right?
they get inducted and don't have any reason to be there.
Yeah, I guess maybe if they did something else, like had a album category or like an album Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
You know, then you could get multiple different versions of bands, because then it would be based on whatever group played on that album. So theoretically, you could have four or five different lineups of Sabbath, because it wouldn't, because some of that 80s stuff is just not that great. But I mean, it's great, but it's not like Hall of Fame great. But you could have, you know, Volume 4 as a Hall of Fame album, and then you could have Heaven and Hell is a Hall of Fame album.
Yeah.
Two separate Black Sabbath albums with two different lead singers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That kind of a thing. But I don't, that would be really complicated. And you imagine the internet exploding over some of the albums that might get nominated under that category.
So what they do is there's a Grammy Hall of Fame.
Okay.
For albums.
Right.
So that's kind of what they do with those.
Or, you know, to expand it to, you know, it would have to be separate from the Grammys, because the Grammys, you know, they have their own set of standards of which albums are judged. So
So basically what they do with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is they take whatever like the classic lineup is, or like whoever. But you know, I guess saying that, when Pink Floyd got inducted, Sid Barrett got inducted with him, and he's only
one member. You know?
Well, and so was Dio. You know, he's only one member, but you know,
right? But I mean, he's more. Sid, yeah, he was,
you know, Sid was the founding member of the band.
And that's what I was going to say too, but
yes, he was only there for an album and a half, but you know, he was still, Sid Barrett was the reason why Pink Floyd existed.
Right. And I would say that not only that, but as far as the other band members were concerned, he was never not a band member, because he's Roger Waters' best friend, right?
Yeah, yeah. He went to school with Roger Waters.
Yeah, so I mean, it's like the reasons he wasn't in the band anymore had nothing to do with a falling out with the band. It was we'll say health issues.
It was mental health issues, yeah, for sure.
So there's no reason to really argue that he's not technically in the band. Yeah. Hell, wasn't Wish You Were Here about him?
Yeah.
And so was The Wall to some degree.
To some degree, yeah.
You know, so he was still kind of in spirit a member of the band. Yeah. So it's like, it's easy to overlook that as an example.
Yeah.
But the Ozzy and Dio thing, it just doesn't work. They're two different bands.
Yeah.
Really?
And there was, when the Eagles got inducted, there was people that were inducted that were partially there throughout their career too. So, I mean, I can see some of the argument for including Dio, but with a band like Black Sabbath, it's just way too, like I said, I think Tony Martin is as influential to Black Sabbath as Ronnie James Dio is.
In many ways, because he did more with them, with Sabbath.
Yes.
And, you know, even out of the three albums that I said, one of the ones I said was great, a lot of those songs were prepped by Tony Martin.
Yeah.
Before Dio even came on board. So, you know, yeah, I don't know. I think, I think that's just people being people. You know, they don't like Ozzy, so they, and you know, Dio is the anti-Ozzy, so
yeah. I don't know. Growing up I was always a big Ozzy Black Sabbath fan,
right?
And I think because of that, I never really gave those Dio albums a fair shot.
And to it took me a long time too. I got to it a lot sooner than you did.
Well, yeah, you did, because I didn't listen to Heaven and Hell until 3 years ago. Maybe.
Right, right.
And it's probably, I think it's probably one of my favorite Black Sabbath albums now. Mm-hmm. It's an incredible album.
Well, I guess for us, at least for me, I can only speak for myself, but I became aware of Sabbath through Ozzy.
Yeah.
So I started out listening to Ozzy's solo stuff before. I mean, I'd heard Sabbath, but I didn't really listen to Sabbath until I started listening to Ozzy's solo stuff that led me into the Sabbath stuff.
Yeah.
So as far as I was concerned, Sabbath was nothing without Ozzy, because I started with Ozzy.
Yeah.
And it was much later when I realized, actually it wasn't that much later, because I bought Dehumanizer when it came out in 92. And I love that album. I played the shit out of it. I had it on cassette.
Yeah.
I played the shit out of that album. So I guess at that point is when I was really starting to think, like, okay, maybe Sabbath as an entity being different than Sabbath with Ozzy, you know, was fine. So I just see them as two different bands. They are musically, stylistically, everything. They're two different bands.
Yeah. And I was the complete opposite, because I started listening to Sabbath before I listened to anything by Ozzy, because I my dad's copy of Paranoid and Volume 4, I grew up listening to those albums.
Right.
So I listened to, of course, I knew Crazy Train and stuff like that, but mm-hmm. I grew up listening to that era of Sabbath before I got into any Ozzy's solo stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I would say, aside from the big hits, my first experience with a handful of Sabbath songs was Speak of the Devil, which was an Ozzy solo live album.
Yeah.
It was just him doing Sabbath songs.
Speaking of that needs to get fucking reissued.
Yes, it does.
By the way,
I mean, the copy you found it for me that I have actually sounds really good, considering it's used, you know, I'm assuming it's an original pressing.
Yeah, that's the only thing that exists.
It's just the original
pressing. It's never been reissued
really?
At all, ever.
I wonder if that's a lot. Well, it can't be now, because all the legal stuff's done.
Yes.
I mean, Sabbath is pretty much owned by Sharon.
Yeah.
Sharon, Ozzy, and Tony. Those are the ones who own Sabbath. So there's really, and they did Live Evil.
Yeah.
So there's really no reason why they shouldn't do, because Speak of the Devil wasn't a direct response to Live Evil.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know, because that was the big thing, that Dio didn't really sing the Ozzy songs as well. And maybe he didn't. They're two different singers. They're two different kinds of singers. So.
It's a very different style.
Absolutely.
But yeah, and I'm actually kind of surprised, and I guess I kind of understand, when they did the Ozzy vinyl box set back in, was it 2019?
2019, I think, yeah.
Initially, I was like, why didn't they include that in that box set? But it's because it's not Ozzy solo material.
Right, it's all Sabbath.
It's all Sabbath.
Everything's Sabbath. Yeah. But yeah, that would be a perfect Record Store Day kind of release, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, Tony's still going to get money off it because of the publishing. So there's no reason that they're, well, like I said, it's the legal stuff's done. It's very clear who owns Sabbath, Black Sabbath, and, you know, it wouldn't hurt anything. And Ozzy is like 50% of that, so what the hell? You should just do it.
I think there's still artists out there that look at physical media and think, what's the point?
Right.
Like, why are we wasting our money doing this when we're only going to make a fraction of a percent. I mean, they'll make money on it, of course, but they're not going to make enough money on it to really make it worth their while, I don't think.
I mean, you could argue that's true for everything, even a brand new album.
I'm not saying that's true.
Right.
There's a lot of artists out there that look at it that way, though.
Because I can tell you, like, Ian Anderson, when the vinyl resurgence started, he's like, he just didn't get it.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, he fully embraces it because he knows that that's what the market's going to be.
Yeah.
And he's even said that
if you do it right and put out a good release, you can make some fucking money on it.
Right. So he knows. He goes, I mean, he did the same thing when digital was the primary music source, format. When they re-released Dick as a Brick, they released it in sections.
Yeah.
So because he knows some people are only want to hear that one part.
Yeah.
Is it silly? Is it breaking up the whole? Sure, but that's what people want. Give people what they want.
Yeah.
And you're good.
Yeah. You know? And there's artists out there that sell a shitload of records. I mean, I know it's a bad fucking example to use because you're really comparing apples to oranges with the rest of the music industry. Record Store Day last year, Taylor Swift sold 100,000 fucking copies of one record in one fucking day.
Right.
One day, 100,000, over 100,000. I think worldwide was 120 or 130,000 copies that was pressed, and it sold out in a fucking day.
Right.
I mean, like I said, it's a bad example to use because she can probably fart into a microphone and sell a million fucking copies of it, but...
Right. Well, I mean, her Illuminati connections are staggering.
Speaking of her, though, I was watching an interview where she was talking about music producers, and this has nothing to do with anything
Did her lizard eyes show through for a second?
No. So, but this is something I didn't know, is she's wanted to work with certain producers before, but she said there's certain producers today that will not produce an album unless they get partial songwriting credits, even though they've got nothing to do with the creation of the song. If they're a producer, they have to get songwriting credits.
Now, there are occasions where producers have gotten writing credits because they did contribute.
Yeah. Well, a lot of them do.
Playing with Pyromania.
Yeah.
They insisted he got writing credits, even though he didn't actually write anything, but he was so involved in the process.
Yes.
Yeah, these fuckers, man. I don't know a lot of producers. Like, I can't name a lot off the top of my head. But there's only one producer right now currently that I think justifies maybe that, and that's Andrew Watt.
I would say there's more than that, I'm sure. I think Max Martin is probably the best producer of the 2000s. Mm-hmm. He's produced, I would just bet off the top of my head that he's probably sold more albums as a producer than anyone in the 2000s.
Well, I just know, like, Andrew Watt just, I mean, he's just popping them out.
Dave Cobb has done a bunch of great albums.
Yeah.
Dave Cobb did both the Rival Sons albums last year.
Okay, yeah.
He did the new Blackberry Smoke album that just came out this week, which is a fantastic fucking album.
I said, I don't know a lot of producers. Andrew Watt comes to mind because I know that he crosses so many different genres too, and it's like even artists that I don't like, if he's a producer, I might listen to that album just to see what's going on. So. And I think isn't he a producer on the new Pearl Jam album?
Who is the producer on the one?
A new album is either coming out or just came out that Andrew Watt did. And I was like, wow. Like, you know, I think he did actually.
Now that I think about it. Yeah. I think, Andrew Watt's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Jack Antonoff is another great one. Yeah. And Jack Antonoff's kind of the same way. Jack Antonoff has worked with a shitload of people. Of course, he does a lot of work with Taylor Swift, but you know he's heavily involved in the creation of the music when he gets writing credit on it. I just thought it was really, kind of shocking that there are, and she's refused to work with people because of that.
As she should. I mean,
and she's fought her entire fucking career
to retain her ownership.
Well,
of her
not
stuff.
Only that, but early on in her career, that was the whole thing. Was like, oh, everyone's writing all these songs for her. She's not writing any of this. And then I don't remember what album it was. There's like a third or fourth album. She wrote everything on the fucking thing just to prove that she could. There was absolutely no other songwriting credits on that album. So just to prove that she could fucking do it.
Right.
So she's fought her whole life to kind of retain ownership of everything to prove that she's able.
And to be the full creative force behind it, I would imagine.
So, yeah, I can see why.
I don't know why she just doesn't produce her own shit then. I mean, there's a lot of artists that do. They just produce their own. It's hard to get a producer sometimes, and you know, for better or worse, in some cases it's worse. But you know, I think any artist who's been in the business long enough, they know how to produce an album.
Yeah,
I mean, yes, it's extra work, but she's a billionaire. It's not really that much extra work for her.
Yeah, I don't know. She primarily has worked with like the same three or four people her entire career.
Right.
There's other really good. John Feldman's a great producer. Of course, from Goldfinger, and he's produced a lot of punk over the last few years. Travis Barker's done a lot of production work.
And that's what I mean. You see a lot of like musicians producing other people's music.
Well, Jack Antonoff, he's the lead singer in Bleachers. I mean,
I'm not familiar with that band, but you know,
I mean, new Bleachers album comes out later this year.
So I mean, it's not like they're not capable of doing it. I get it. It's like double work if you're writing, recording, and producing. I get it. It's a lot of extra work, but you know, you if you can do it, you already have the vision of the songs.
Yeah.
you know, like I said, for better or worse, because sometimes that's great because you get a really bad producer and it could just ruin everything. Sometimes it's bad because you don't have someone standing over your shoulder going, eh, is you sure you want to do it that way?
Well,
you know, having a second opinion kind of thing.
I think that's kind of what hurt the new Metallica album is not having that strong producer to tell them, hey, maybe these songs are a little fucking long.
I watch, like, if you've watched Some Kind of Monster, the documentary, I feel like the producer on that is just, because I don't know who it is. I don't remember who it was. Yeah. I know it's, but he's pretty much just a yes man on that.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying, though, is like not having a good producer can hurt your albums. You know, I look back on, you know, someone like Jerry Finn. I think Jerry Finn's probably, at least in my opinion, one of the greatest music producers of the last, you know, 35 years. There are so many albums that Jerry did or Jerry worked on, whether it was like Dookie, who worked on And Out Come the Wolves, of course, End of the State, Take Off Your Pants and Jacket, Untitled Album by Blink. Pretty much every like punk album from like 1994 until like 2005, he died in 2008, but up until like 2005, like he did so many like iconic punk albums, and they were that way because Jerry was the producer on them, or Jerry mixed the album. Right. Jerry had a very specific sound that he helped craft, and that's why I say if you get the right producer and work on them with the right producer, he can take a really good album and make it a special album. That's why I'm not a big fan of when musicians produce their own albums.
Yeah,
because
like
they tend to not be great. The last Blink-182, I'm sorry, the last MXPX album, I think is kind of a victim of that because they produced their last two albums. I think there was a producer, but he was like a producer in name.
Right.
They pretty much produced their own albums. The album before was really good. Their last album was just kind of okay. I think it would have been better if they had somebody in the studio to kind of help direct.
Right. And that's ultimately what it comes down to. It's like you can having someone just asking questions.
Yeah.
You know, are you sure you want to do that? Or what about this? You know, it doesn't mean you have to go with it, but what about this?
Yeah.
And a good example of that in a sense is, and this is why I say, you know, if you're capable of doing it, do it yourself. But
I don't think you should ever do it yourself, but okay.
Well, every Tull album from this, or from Stand Up to A, was produced by Ian Anderson himself.
Yeah.
But he had other band members in there. So it wasn't just, you know, that's what I'm saying. It's self-produced in a sense, but he had other input.
Yeah.
And, you know, you would be the first to say that a lot of those albums are the best that they ever produced.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, so there's an occasion.
I'm not saying you can't do it.
He also then had a producer come in, which was Broadsword and the Beast. And, you know, that's fine. Producing Under Wraps, though, then it's like, you know, the argument. I love Under Wraps, but as a consensus, it's not great. So.
I'm not saying you can't self-produce great albums.
Right.
Because you absolutely can. I think the problem is, and a lot of albums, a lot of artists get into this problem, is it's hard to see your own flaws.
Right.
It's hard to see where your music, because you've created it, you've crafted it.
Right.
Especially someone like Ian Anderson, who's very involved in every aspect of the band. It can be hard to admit, especially because you're dealing with a lot of ego.
Right.
Every successful musician out there has a very big fucking ego.
Right.
You have to survive out there. So it's hard to kind of pull back on the ego and see the issues and see the problems and then know to correct them. And that's why I think, like, if I was a musician, you know, I understand, you know, it's financially you're better off producing your own album.
Right. Well, a lot of times
musically,
at least,
I think you're going to, I would say probably 8 times out of 10, produce a better album if you have a strong producer.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing, because like you know, having just yes men or no one to at least call you out.
Yeah,
doesn't mean you have to do it. You know, just having that voice in the back of your head. You know, that's not yours. That says, you know, hold on, that's great, but why don't we try this?
Yeah,
or that's garbage. get rid of that. That is not going to work.
Yeah. I think the other problem that we run into, I don't think we're ever going to get to our topic, by the way.
That's okay.
The other issue that I think music nowadays runs into, and I think rock music is, this is something that's uniquely to rock music, because rock music 15, 20 years ago was created in a studio with a band. That's not how rock albums are put together anymore. A lot of rock albums are, you know, you got a main songwriter. He's at home writing a lot of the stuff, and he kind of, you know, emails out pieces to people to get their opinion from other band members. And then, you know, then they'll kind of come into the studio and play the song and record it.
Right. Kind of like a latter day Jethro Tull album opposed to a 1970s Jethro Tull album.
You know, 15, 20 years ago, the band got into the studio and created the songs in the studio.
Right.
That's not how music is. And that's not how rock music is made
I would
anymore.
Say even that in those cases, some cases, you had a primary songwriter who would come in with songs and said, okay, let's work these. Let's, as a band unit, let's work with these songs.
Yes.
Let's bring this together. Here's the shell or the core. Let's build a shell around it, or build a core, whatever, you know, however you want to word it. I mean, that's how the Beatles work. They all just, you know, they'd come up, they'd write their own songs, but then they'd bring them into the band, and the band unit would work them out.
So. I saw an interview within the last couple of weeks from Matt Skiba. He's the lead singer and guitarist for Alkaline Trio.
Mm-hmm.
And he was even talking about this, and he thinks that's why what made their new album, Blood, Hair, and Eyeballs, such a great album is because for the first time in years, they recorded an album that way. They all got in the studio. Matt said he had some songs he put together, but he scrapped all of them.
Right.
Came in the studio and like sat down with his band and had that like that focus, that whole band focus on creating this album. And it's an incredible album. I think it's, you know, it's easily my favorite album of the year so far.
Hmm.
And he said that's something that he learned from John Feldman, because that's something that Blink did with the two albums that Matt created with Blink. That's how they did. They got in the studio. They created this thing. When Blink recorded Neighborhoods, and was it 2011? That was the last album with Tom before Tom left the band for the second time. Mm. It's always had this like disjointed sound to me. It didn't sound like a Blink 182 album because that's not how it was created. That album was recorded in like three different continents by three different fucking people. I think financially, it doesn't make sense to do it that way because you're spending a lot of fucking money on studio time.
Right.
But I think music overall, rock music in particular, would be better off if the entire band got into a studio and had that unity, because I think that really comes through in the music.
It tends to. I think, if you're probably to grab the top 100 albums of all time and look at how they're produced, I think you'd find a lot of that going on.
Well, I mean, that's
in terms of, well, say rock albums, just because that's kind of the genre we're playing in.
Yeah.
And that's what you're kind of focusing on specifically.
So. But yeah, I don't even know how the hell I got off on any of that. But
it started with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Oh, that's right.
we wandered quite a ways away, but it did start. We did have a starting point there.
So maybe we'll talk about our topic on the next episode, the Entertainment Now podcast. But any questions or comments, you can email us at entnowpod@gmail.com. If you're watching this on YouTube, give us the old thumbs up and all that YouTube kind of stuff. And leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or whatever the podcast app that you use. But I don't know. Anything else to add, Ian?
No.
Well, all right, man. Until next time.
Talk to y'all later.
Peace. Play my role, let me tell you about it. This shit right here, man, I'm proud about it. Only real niggas reside around me. Yo, lady, drop a card around me. Dip like I know you care, bitch. Show me the rust like we in the ring. Got you two cobras, you wanna hang. Shoulder to shoulder, the niggas basic. You know I won't lie. You know that I ain't for that fuck shit. You niggas alright, but I'm way better and she love it. Know that y'all sick as fuck. Here go this tissue, bruh. We taking the dub, hoping you get you some. This here like a pick me up. She taking my drugs. Know they see the sign. That's some dollar signs. Know they sick as fuck. Know they sick as fuck. Tell them get well soon. Tell them get well soon. Know you sick as fuck. Get well soon. Oh shit. Watch out, you the gun.
bitches who showing their bodies. Swear to God, nigga, this my